Here we go.
Everybody is just on their feet screaming, kill, kill, kill. This is hockey.
Oh, my Lord. Wow.
This is the Puck Podcast.
I was very entertained and excited. I couldn't believe how good it was.
Shut your yap.
This is the Puck Podcast.
There's a point where it just becomes absurd.
That was gutless. Gutless.
This is the Puck Podcast.
Hi, I'm Wayne Gretzky, and you're listening to The Real Great One.
This is the Puck Podcast with Eddie Garcia and Doug Stolhan.
Okay, guys, show us what you got.
From Los Angeles, I'm Eddie Garcia, along with Doug Stolhan. Thanks for joining us for another edition of the Puck Podcast. It is Wednesday, April the 3rd, 2024. On this week's show in the first period, we'll discuss the past week, minus one day, on and off the ice as far as the NHL is concerned. We had six teams join the Rangers in clinching playoff spots, and Austin Matthews is trying to see if he can get to 70 goals in the season. Second period, we're going to take a closer look at some of the races for playoff positioning now that we are in the final month of the regular season. And in the third period, we'll read your emails. All that and more coming up on this edition of the Puck Podcast. But before we get into all that, time for our quick off-ice report. A couple of minutes about what's been going on with us. I bring in my co-host Doug Stolhan, who you can't see, but I can, and he is, Fu Manchu. What kind of mustache?
I don't think you can say that anymore. Handlebar.
I just did.
Handlebar, man.
Handlebar?
Isn't that the name of this?
I don't know. I don't think so. I think handlebar is mustache that kind of extends out, kind of on its own, like you would grab handlebars. Yeah, no, I don't think that's what that is. No.
Let me take a look at the handlebar mustache. Yeah, that's more the Paul McLean, you know, what he had back in the day. The big,
I don't know. I mean, that
wide.
I don't, yeah, that's
it's
not
very
really,
wide. Yeah,
not a
I don't
thing
know what
anymore.
This is, honestly, it's not gonna stay for long. I decided I had not shaved. I grow a very slow growing, sparse beard. It does not get thick on the cheeks. And yet it grows pretty thick as a goatee. So I went to shave and I decided, you know what, let's go with this look for a coworker to see if they will say anything. They didn't. And this is day three with it, and it probably won't last until the weekend.
Was that part of an April Fool's joke in some way?
No. And Jackie and I were talking about this. A lot of people think I would be prone to being an April Fool's guy, and I'm not. I've never been.
Good. You know,
it's too obvious.
Yeah. I hate practical jokes.
I know you do. It's one of the things
you and I differ greatly on.
Yeah. But it's too on the nose and too obvious. So that's the one day that I don't do anything. I'm very serious. So everybody, you know, is on their guard around me. And it's the one day you could probably relax. Every other day is to be. No, I don't know. I just give it a shot, you know.
I had a embarrassing facial hair related story that I'll try and quickly share. So I have this, I've had facial hair for a long time, the goatee. So yeah, I have a shaver and it works really great. Loved it. Had it for a long time. And then
what
suddenly,
is their name?
I don't even know. And then they don't sponsor the show anyway. So who cares?
I was talking about the person. It's a person that shaves you.
No. So it stopped, you know, you plug it into the wall and it charges.
Yep.
So it stopped charging. And so I'm like, well, that sucks. I have to buy a new one. So I bought a different one and I hated it. So I took it back and I went and found the exact same one that I had before and I bought that. So I go to plug it in and I go to use it and I'm like, oh my God, this thing won't hold a charge either. This is ridiculous. I'm thinking about buying another one before I finally, and this was weeks and weeks and weeks later, I finally was like, you know what? Maybe the charger is the thing that's gone out, not the razor. So I had used the old charger like a fool. So I got the new charger out of the new one I bought. I plug it in. Oh, look, now both shavers work. So now I've got two of them. And I was thinking about getting a third. Like, what a moron you are.
A third? So,
yeah, third. I was going to buy another shaver. I thought it was the shaver this whole time when it was the damn charger that went. I should have known because when you plug it in,
the light comes on.
The light didn't come on. Yeah, that was kind of embarrassing.
Well, now you got an upstairs and a downstairs shaver.
I got a spare in case something goes wrong. So
yeah, I mean, you never know when you know it might need an emergency shave. True. You are prepared. Travel shaver.
Yep.
Very good.
So April Fool's, but we did have Easter on this past Sunday, and so got together with my wife and all of her extended family, which is always good times. They're good folks, and that was good. We did a thing where it was supposed to be a smaller get together, and it ended up being just as big as it always was, which is interesting. But anyway, everybody brought a side dish. Like, there wasn't really a main course, mm-hmm. but everybody brought a little something, and I loved that. That was awesome. Like, it was such a great little variety of different things.
It's a little buffet.
Yeah, a little potluck, right? They don't call that a potluck. Yeah,
I'm capable. I would love to test this one day. Maybe I will on the cruise. Jackie has known this for years about me, that if I have a little bit of a lot of things, I can eat forever. But if I have a lot of one thing, there will eventually be a point where I stop. But if I'm just like, there's a restaurant we like in town, and I don't think I've ever ordered anything off the actual menu. I've only ordered appetizers because they're so good. I order like 3 or 4 appetizers, and that's my meal. And I will try that at the buffet, of just getting a little bit of everything and just keep going, and see how long it takes me to be eventually where I push the plate away and say no more.
All right. That's all I got. Anything else for this week you want to mention? As my dog is barking at God knows what. Hopefully you can't hear that very well, but anyway.
Oh, we can hear Herbie. He's got something to say. What's his story from this past week?
He's been there were some trying times with Herbie. He bit me a couple of times, and that didn't go over well. He's been very protective of my wife. And so both the times it involved something where we're sitting on the, and he also has a thing where at nighttime he gets a little squirrely, like in the morning, in the daytime, he couldn't be more loving and affectionate and good. And then at nighttime he gets a little cranky.
Does he drink at night?
Not to our knowledge, but we're figuring things out. When he gets cranky, we put him in his little, we got a little caged off area with a bed in there, and we'll put him in there and let him just take a nap.
Put him in timeout.
I mean, it's not really what it is, but I guess in a way. And then just being careful when we interact. What happened was Karen wanted to show me a picture on her phone. And so she sits, she has like one end of the couch she lays on, and I sit at the other end. And so she like handed me the phone to reach over and give me her phone. And I reached over to get it, and he was upset by that, and he bit me on my arm. And so that's
not fun. Did he draw blood?
He did not, just a bruise. But he did draw blood once. He was on the bed. He's no longer allowed on our bed. He does not sleep with us anymore. So that was one change we made, and he seems to have been okay with it. He sleeps in his own little pen now. But anyway, he was on the bed, and my wife was asleep. He had kind of run in there and jumped up on the bed. We have little doggy steps, and so I went to pick him up and take him off, and he did not want to come off the bed, and he bit my thumb and drew blood. So my wife
woke up Karen because you're yelling.
Yeah, my wife was ready to give him back, give him away. And I was like, no, let's work on him. Let's work on him.
I was going to say the mystery of why Herbie was available for adoption.
Yeah, but he's like the last 2 weeks, he's been really good. He's changing. We're just kind of figuring things out. With all the dogs we had before were pretty well behaved. He's the first problem child we've had. So we're just having to figure things out, and he's been really good the last week or so. My wife just took him to the vet and to get a little checkup, and she was afraid he was going to bite the vet folks and act really bad. She said he was great. She said he did a really good job. Wasn't barking, wasn't growling at anybody. They did a full exam on him and kind of twisted him and pulled him and moved him around, and he didn't do anything. So,
well, yeah, because it's daytime.
I don't know. I think she said she asked him asked them about that, and they really didn't have an answer. But
sundowners,
yeah,
it's a thing.
He's only like two, so
I'd say that is I mean, that gets back to the Norm Macdonald of luckily you have a small dog. Yeah. If that was a big dog biting you, you'd have big problems.
Oh yeah. I know. I've said that. I've said that before. I don't want to have a dog that can actually do harm to me, you know, like a, you know, little a nip on the thumb or whatever I can handle. Yeah.
It's if not Herbie goes crazy.
Oh no, I've got to put easily. A Band-Aid on. Yeah. And if he does, you know, ever turn to the dark side, I could always, you know, just chuck him over the fence or something. You know what I mean? I mean, I could throw him like a football. He's about the size of a football, you know, a little bit bigger, but worst comes to worst, you know, can't do that with a German Shepherd. I remember one time I had a doctor briefly when I first moved to LA, and he came in and both his hands were all bandaged up. I was like, oh man, what happened to you? And he's like, oh, I was breaking up a fight between my dogs. I was like, well, jeez, yep. That sucks. Gosh.
Yep. No, I'm just picturing you chucking Herbie over the fence. You could do it with a golden retriever. It'd just be a lot more of a struggle.
Yeah,
a lot more of a battle.
Yeah, for sure.
My goodness.
You have to throw him like a hammer throw in the Olympics and spin around and then let him go.
No, he didn't clear the fence. Now he's really pissed.
Yeah.
And I've spent my energy. No, I've thought more the big dogs. Like I have a friend that has a St. Bernard, and I've thought if anything happened to its paw where I needed to lift it to get it into the car or help it, it was immobile for some reason. I couldn't do it.
That reminds me of a terrible story I heard.
I don't want to hear it then. Who wants to hear terrible things?
It involved a woman who was choking, and she was so large they could not do the Heimlich on her to help her out, and she didn't make it.
Well, thanks for telling us. always the bastion of good news, Eddie Garcia.
Sorry.
Leave your rotten.com.
I wonder if that's exploits. Still around. God, that was like wasn't that the very beginnings of the internet?
That was back like, when there were very few restrictions photos. On the internet.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You can just find that scrolling on Twitter
and photos
now.
Of death.
Yeah. You can just scroll on Twitter and find awful stuff now. And,
yeah. Anyway. No, there's no doubt. I saw something the other day on, I think it was on Threads, and I was like, good Lord. Like, I don't even know if that's real anymore because of AI and whatnot. Yeah, but either
car
way,
wrecks and stuff.
It's awful. Yeah. No, it was a homeless person. Just that's obviously lost their mind and was doing things that it's like, okay, this is beyond the pale at this point. There's no more like, let's get this person some shelter. It's butterfly net and incarceration time. I mean, my goodness.
Butterfly net. Oh, Lordy. That's like from an old cartoon or something.
You have no idea how old I am in my life. You know what I mean? Like the movies I'm watching, the books I read, the shows I watch.
I think I know.
I live an old life. So the references I make and the kind of things the visuals in my head, but it's because the real world is awful. Why would I pay attention to the actual modern events? They're horrific and I can do nothing about any of them. So why stay up to date? Escape to the world of movies and TV shows from the past where I know what happens. I know how it ends.
Well, yeah. on that cheerful thought.
Yeah. Any other tales you want to bring us of death and destruction?
No, I don't think so. I'm good.
All right. Same for later.
Yeah.
Let's definitely talk some hockey because there has been some movement, not a lot, but some movement. And I think it's much ado about nothing, but the Eastern Conference playoff race is delicious. That one I'm very interested in as somebody with no rooting interest.
Right.
So let's get to what happened.
We'll start with the first period, and we're going to give you a quick note on
that. Makes sense.
Every game over the in the NHL over the past week, minus one day. Remember, we had an extra day last week. We recorded the show one day later than normal. So obviously that day won't be talked about. And we'll discuss some key things we saw this week as far as the games on the ice. And we had a weird schedule this week. We'll start with Thursday, where we had 14 games on the schedule. And we'll begin with the Stars defeating the Canucks in Vancouver 3-1 in a battle of division leaders. Dallas, which extended its winning streak to 6 in a row, clinched a playoff spot with that win, while temporarily preventing Vancouver from clinching. Jamie Benn had the game-winning goal in the third period, and goalie Jake Oettinger had 27 saves. Predators lose to the Coyotes 8-4. Nashville's 18-game point streak comes to an end. Arizona rookie Logan Cooley had his first career hat trick, goals 14, 15, and 16 on his inaugural season in the league. In the loss for the Predators, Jason Zucker, trade deadline pickup, had a couple of goals, numbers 12 and 13 for him. Yusei Saros allowed 6 goals on 27 shots before getting pulled. Rangers beat the Avalanche in Colorado 3-2 in a shootout. Artemi Panarin and Vincent Trocheck scoring in the shootout. Avs star Nathan MacKinnon held without a point, and that snapped his home point streak at 35 games. That was the second longest in NHL history. He was 5 away from Wayne Gretzky's record. Golden Knights down the Jets in Winnipeg 4-1. Ivan Barbashev, a pair of goals for Vegas, numbers 17 and 18. Logan Thompson, 39 saves in net. You had the Hurricanes shutting out the Red Wings 4-0. Carolina clinched a playoff spot, 6th straight season. They're in the postseason. Goalie Frederik Andersen, still undefeated since returning from his blood clot issues. He's 7-0. He had 24 saves in that one. And Detroit's loss also clinched a playoff spot for the Florida Panthers. Flyers fall to the Canadiens 4-1. Caden Primo had 29 saves in net for Montreal. Nick Suzuki gets his 30th goal of the year. And that loss clinched a playoff spot for the Boston Bruins. So the Montreal Canadiens helping out the Boston Bruins, which is the unintended consequences of them getting that victory. Islanders beat the Panthers 3-2 in Florida. Jean-Gabriel Pageau, we've had a J.G. Pageau sighting. He gets the game-winning goal in the loss. Panthers captain Alexander Barkov became the first player in Panthers history to reach 700 career points. Oilers knock off the Kings 4-1. Connor McDavid, a goal and 2 assists. Stuart Skinner at 32 saves in net. For McDavid, 3rd straight season, he has reached 120 points or more, joining Wayne Gretzky, Mario Lemieux, Marcel Dion, Guy Lafleur, Phil Esposito, and Paul Coffey, players who have had 120 points or more 3 straight seasons. Maple Leafs beat the Capitals 5-1. Tyler Bertuzzi, 2 goals for Toronto, numbers 17 and 18 for him. Joseph Woll in net had 24 saves in the victory, and defenseman Mark Giordano, playing his first game since February the 29th, coming back from a concussion, had a goal for the Leafs as well. Blues knock off the Flames 5-3. Brandon Saad gets the game winner for St. Louis. Pavel Buchnevich, a pair of goals, 25 and 26 for him. In the loss for Calgary, Andre Kuzmenko had 2 goals. Wild over the Sharks 3-1. Matt Boldy, game winner in the third period for Minnesota, and goalie Philip Gustafson had 26 saves in net. Penguins beat the Blue Jackets 3-2. Evgeny Malkin had 2 goals, numbers 20 and 21 for him, both coming on the power play. Drew O'Connor had the game-winning goal in the third period for Pittsburgh. Columbus dropped 6 in a row at that point. Kraken defeat the Ducks 4-2, down 2-1 in the third. Seattle closed out the game with 3 straight goals. Ty Cartier scores the game-winner for Anaheim. Both their goals came shorthanded on the same penalty kill. And the Senators beat the Blackhawks 2-0. Claude Giroux scored 36 seconds into the game, and that was all the offense Ottawa would need. Anton Forsberg just 19 saves in net in getting the shutout. It was Ottawa's first win over Chicago since December 20th of 2016, snapping an 11-game losing streak. And that was 14 games from this past Thursday.
Well, take a break for a second. I know there's only one game on Friday, but you're going to have a 15-game Saturday to recap. So
yeah, we had 14-1. 15-1.
Yeah, the NHL is genius when it comes to scheduling. I get it. There's stadium availability and travel issues. I get it, but still sucks when you've got so many games on one day. You can't watch them all, and then you want to watch a game the next day, and there's one, and you may not even want to watch it. And in this case, I didn't. The Devils and Sabres the next day. In fact, we can give that score right now, and we can just skip Friday. It was a 5-2 win.
No. Stick to format.
Please. Spoiler alert. A lot of games, obviously, to get to on this day. I want to start with the end of the Predators' winning streak, point streak, I should say. If you're going to lose, go big. And they did, giving up 8 goals to the Arizona Coyotes. UC Saros getting chased, Kevin Lankinen coming in, and did great in relief, but too little too late. 2 empty net goals, by the way. So, they gave up 6, but 8 on the scoreboard. I'm here to tell you, though, the Arizona Coyotes next year are going to be pretty good, because I'm really like,
I've heard that before.
No, I know, but I mean, it's just, I'm not saying a cup contender. I'm saying they're already,
I mean, but we
much
thought,
improved.
Look, I'm Clayton not here.
Keller is legitimately good. Logan Cooley is legitimately good. Yeah. Probably the second best rookie in the NHL this year. They have really good young forwards that are finally maturing.
But
and I get it.
They we have thought it was going to be that way this year. We
no,
thought
we
they were
yes, we did. They got off to a good start.
We thought at the beginning of the year. We thought at the beginning of the year that they were going to be either in a wild card spot or contending for one, and they haven't even been close. So
they haven't even been close.
No, not really.
For the first half of the season.
Not really. I mean,
look, they dropped off. They had a horrible second half. There's no doubt about it. But I'm telling you, when you watch them play, the pieces are obviously there that they can continue to add to.
I believe it when I see it.
Well, I hope you'll see it next year. I am impressed with what I've seen. Logan Cooley will not win the Calder Trophy, but he's the best rookie I've seen in the NHL this year. He had a hat trick in this game. He is legitimately talented and offensively gifted. I hope he gets to 20 goals this season before it's all said and done. And obviously, Clayton Keller is still legit and is one of those guys that is a difference maker if he gets the chance to play it. Now, they still have a lot of work to be done on defense and in net. As much as I like Connor Ingram and Karel Vemelka, they still got work to do there. But the pieces on offense are starting to come into fruition, and impressed with what they got. So not as bad a loss as it might look on paper for Nashville. I thought the Dallas Stars, what do we always say? If you go back in the 18 effing years we've been doing this show, what do we always say around the playoffs? Your best players have to be your best players. And the Dallas Stars get a game against the Vancouver Canucks. I will continue to say the Vancouver Canucks are paper tigers. I would want to play them in the first round. They cannot win consistently without Thatcher Demko. He is proving himself as a Vezina caliber goalie, because without them, they're struggling. But their best players, the Dallas Stars, were their best players. Rupe Hintz and Jason Robertson had a combined 5 points. Joe Pavelski with another 2. Jamie Benn with 2 points. And that's enough. And then Jake Oettinger was great in net. So it's the story of that game right there was clear. Moving on to Edmonton, your LA Kings cannot beat that team. I don't know what the hangup is. They've done so many different things. They had Philip Deneau in this game. They had Pierre-Luc Dubois. They built the team to play this specific opponent, and they couldn't beat them. They did pretty well defensively, only 19 shots allowed. They got 32 of their own, but then their goaltending fell apart and wasn't up to the snuff. So if that is another first-round matchup, which I don't think it will be, then it's a very tough one for the Kings. The reason it won't be is because the Golden Knights are playing some better hockey right now, and they got a very nice win over another paper tiger, in my opinion, the Winnipeg Jets, who are struggling. Logan Thompson with 39 saves on 40 shots, a fantastic night from him. And then they get their star player, Jack Eichel, on the board, a couple goals from depth guys like Ivan Barbashev and Pavel Dorfiev. It was an impressive win on the road for Vegas. The matchup that I think everybody went into the day wanting to see was the Rangers Avalanche, a potential Stanley Cup final. And boy, would the NHL and the networks that broadcast the NHL be delighted if the Rangers Avalanche was the Stanley Cup final. A very good game. Grandma Fiddler was no doubt making a phone call after that one. No score after 1-0 after 2. And then a final in the shootout for a 3-2 win for the Rangers. Very fun game to watch. 2 elite teams. When you watch as much of the Ducks as I do, and then you watch a game like this, it really shows you how big a jump the talent is from the elite teams to the non-elite teams.
All right. Very good. Let's move on to the one game on Friday. As Doug told you, the Sabres beat the Devils 5-2. What he didn't tell you was that Buffalo's Tage Thompson had the pants trick, a four-goal game, goals 23, 24, 25, and 26. He also had a natural hat trick mixed in as well. Stick a fork in New Jersey if you have not already. But if you're a new listener and don't know about the legend of the pants trick, it was coined many years ago by Doug's nephew. They went to a game. Doug was explaining the rules of hockey, said if there's a hat trick, we throw our hats on the ice, three goals. And he said, as a child would do, what about four goals? And then you asked him, I don't know, what do you think? And he said, pants trick. And so from here on out, it is a pants trick, a four-goal game pants trick. And
I'm literally wearing pants that say pants trick right now. Wow, I've got my Puck Podcast pants trick pants on.
That is a collector's item right there.
Yeah.
Any comments on this game at all?
No, it didn't matter. Good for Tage Thompson. Move on to games that do.
All right, 15 games on a busy Saturday. We'll start with the Avalanche rallying down 3-1 to beat the Predators 7-4 to clinch a playoff spot and reach 100 points on the season. Nathan MacKinnon, after having the point streak come to an end, had 4 points with 2 goals and 2 assists. Panthers knock off the Red Wings 3-2 in a shootout. Alexander Barkov had 2 third-period goals, numbers 20 and 21 for him. Sam Reinhart added the shootout game winner for Florida, and in the loss, Dylan Larkin for Detroit, his 29th of the year. Rangers outscore the Coyotes in Arizona 8-5. Alexis Lafreniere gets the hat trick, goals 23, 24, and 25. Those 25 goals are a new career high for him, and that helped goalie Jonathan Quick record win number 392. He passes Ryan Miller to become the all-time winningest American-born goalie in NHL history. Maple Leafs shut out the Sabres 3-0 in Buffalo. Elias Samsonov, 34 saves in the shutout, and Austin Matthews scored his 60th goal of the season. Second time in his career, he's hit the 60-goal mark. He joins a group of 8 NHL players to have multiple 60-goal seasons. He's the first to do it since Pavel Bure back in the 92-93 and 93-94 seasons when he was with the Vancouver Canucks. Wayne Gretzky and Mike Bossy lead the list with 5 60-goal seasons apiece. Lightning beat the Islanders 4-1. Steven Stamkos gets his 30th on the year, 9th time in his career. He has scored 30 or more in a season. Anthony Cirelli had 2 goals, numbers 17 and 18 for him, and Andre Vasilevsky, 27 saves in net. Tampa Bay was 8-0-1 in their last 9 after that win over the Islanders. Flyers lose to the Blackhawks 5-1 in Philadelphia. Samuel Ersson, 5 goals allowed on 24 shots. In the win, Chicago netminder Arvid Soderblom had 30 saves. And with that loss, Philadelphia had dropped out of third place in the Metropolitan Division at that time. Bruins beat the Capitals in D.C. 3-2 in a shootout in a potential first-round playoff preview. Boston goes over 100 points in the season for the 6th straight year. Kevin Shattenkirk gets the shootout game winner. However, the point in the shootout loss did move Washington into a tie with Philadelphia, and the Caps had the tiebreaker at the time, so that put them into the third spot. John Carlson for the Capitals did play in his 1,000th career game and had a goal in that game. Jets lose to the Senators in Winnipeg 3-2, 5th straight loss for the Jets. Brady Tkachuk for Ottawa had a power play goal with a minute 45 left. That was your game winner, his 33rd of the season, and Ottawa had won a season-high 5 games in a row at that point. Blues were shut out at home by the Sharks 4-0. Mackenzie Blackwood, 35 saves in that shootout win for San Jose. That loss by the Blues clinched a playoff spot for the Vancouver Canucks. Golden Knights get by the Wild in Minnesota 2-1 in overtime. Jonathan Marchessault gets the overtime game winner into an empty net. That was because Minnesota head coach John Hines decided to pull the goalie in overtime. It worked earlier this year. This time it did not work. So, of course, they do not get the 1 point for going to overtime because they pulled the goalie. They forfeit that point. No points for the Minnesota Wild, but they're obviously a team that needs 2 points, not one, so he rolled the dice. This time it did not work. Logan Thompson for Vegas had 32 saves in the win, and in the loss, Kirill Kaprizov gets his 37th goal of the season. Oilers defeat the Ducks 6-1. Connor McDavid, 2 goals, numbers 28 and 29 for him. Zach Hyman gets his 52nd of the season, and Calvin Pickard allowed 1 goal on 22 shots in net for Edmonton. Flames knock off the Kings 4-2. Blake Coleman, his 29th of the year, was the game winner. LA had 9 shots on goal in the first 2 periods. They finished with 18. Stars shut out the Kraken 3-0 in Seattle. Jake Ottinger just 17 saves in the shutout for Dallas, and Wyatt Johnston added his 29th of the year. Hurricanes blank the Canadiens in Montreal 3-0 to reach 100 points on the season. Pyotr Kochetkov, 26 saves in the shutout for Carolina, and Sebastian Aho added his 33rd goal of the year. And the Blue Jackets knocked off the Penguins 4-3 in a shootout to snap a six-game losing skid and split the back-to-back games against Pittsburgh. Damon Severson with the shootout game winner for Columbus.
Well, back-to-back games now for Nashville. They get points in 18 straight, and then they get blown out in two straight. They lose, give up 8 goals, 2 empty netters to Arizona. Follow that up by giving up 7 goals to the Avalanche. And just a brutal back-to-back effort from them, from their defense, as the it looks like the clock has struck midnight on their Cinderella run there. But they're still going to make the playoffs. It's just, you know, they couldn't keep this going forever. It ended spectacularly. We will see later in the week if they are able to bounce back. But those are some tough back-to-back games for them, giving up 15 goals combined in just 2 games. Before we get to the final game I want to recap, let's get to the Bruins and Capitals. And this was a doozy of a game, as you mentioned, potential playoff preview in the first round if Washington does indeed make it. And I think Washington availed themselves pretty well, showed that they could go toe-to-toe with the Capitals, a game that went to a shootout. Obviously, there will be no shootouts in the playoffs, thankfully. So you're going to have to actually beat them, and they looked like they could hang with them. I didn't see they did seem to be surviving a lot of the game, especially in the third period. I thought they only had 5 shots in the third period. They only had 10 shots in the second and the third period combined. So I thought they were hanging on, but to their credit, they were able to do it. Charlie Lindgren played very well in net, and if you're going to be able to, it's got to be a confidence booster that you could go to overtime and go to a shootout against one of the best teams in the East. So if the Capitals do make it, they will have confidence that they can play with those teams, at least keep it competitive and keep it close. But the oof game of the night was definitely the Flyers 5-1 loss to the Blackhawks on home ice. Only the 7th win on the road for the Blackhawks all season. If you're going to lose to the Blackhawks, that's not good. And if you're going to get blown out by them on home ice, woof, that is awful. As you said, Samuel Ersson, terrible. Now, the backup in this game, interesting. Ivan Fedotov, we talked about him at the end of last week, guy that got signed and brought over from Russia. He was released, and 27-year-old rookie now with the Philadelphia Flyers. He had to be watching this thinking, I know I could do better than that, and he will get his chance soon enough. But that was a brutal loss. If they end up missing the playoffs, those are 2 points you're definitely going to want back. As for the next game, the Canucks beat the Ducks 3-2 on Sunday, the only game of Sunday's action, and it was a real doozy. It's a good sign when Vancouver can basically sleepwalk through the game and still win in regulation, because that's what they did. They didn't show up until the third period, but it was enough as they get goals and a game-winning goal from Dakota, Mr. Joshua.
What are you doing? We've got defined roles here. What are you doing?
I want to get the game over with because it was a Ducks loss. So there you go.
Well, I'm sorry. I'm going to tell you that on Sunday we had one game, the Canucks getting by the Ducks 3-2 to reach 100 points on the season. As Doug mentioned, which he shouldn't have, Dakota Joshua had 2 games
for
Vancouver, numbers 14 and 15. What did I say? 2 goals, 14 and 15 for him. He got the game winner in the third. Brock Besser added his 38th then in the loss. Owen Zellweger for the Ducks gets his first NHL goal.
Moving on to Monday.
8 games on Monday. We had the Maple Leafs knocking off the Panthers 6-4 in a possible first-round playoff preview. Austin Matthews, 2 goals, numbers 61 and 62. He is now 8 away from 70 with 8 games left to play. In the loss, Sam Reinhart did get his 52nd of the year for Florida. But for Matthews, the rest of the way, he's got Tampa Bay, Montreal, Pittsburgh, New Jersey twice, Detroit, Florida, and then Tampa Bay again. So he's got 2 against the Devils, 2 against the Lightning. So 8 games, 8 goals away from 70 for Austin Matthews. So we'll see if he can get a hat trick mixed in somewhere in there. That would help him out a lot. So we'll see. Red Wings beat the Lightning in Tampa 4-2. David Perron, a game winner for Detroit in the third period. Lucas Raymond added his 25th to help the Red Wings snap a 4-game winless streak. Detroit pulled even with Washington for the final wildcard spot in the East at that point. The Capitals, though, have two games in hand. Rangers fall at home to the Penguins 5-2. Sidney Crosby, two goals, numbers 36 and 37, to snap the Rangers' five-game winning streak. Crosby is tied with Wayne Gretzky as an NHL record of averaging a point per game for 19 consecutive seasons. Crosby at that time had 82 points in 74 games this season. Islanders knock off the Flyers 4-3 in overtime. Brock Nelson, his 30th, was the overtime game winner. Bo Horvat added his 30th as well for New York as they moved 4 points back at Philadelphia for a playoff spot. Islanders two games in hand on the Flyers. And the aforementioned Ivan Fedotov, the goaltender who came over from Russia, 6'7", by the way, made his NHL debut. He replaced Samuel Ersson after the first period, and he allowed two goals on 21 shots in the second and third period. Giant goalie. We had the Blues getting a big win over the Oilers, 3-2 in overtime. Brandon Saad, OT game winner. Braden Schenn had two goals, numbers 16 and 17. In the loss for Edmonton, Leon Draisaitl gets his 39th of the year for Draisaitl. The Jets edge the Kings 4-3. Cole Perfetti had a pair of goals for Winnipeg, numbers 16 and 17, including the game winner in the third period. Winnipeg snapped a six-game losing skid, while LA dropped their third in a row. It's their longest losing stretch under interim coach Jim Hiller. Avalanche were surprised by the Blue Jackets 4-1. Alex Nylander had two goals for Columbus. He's got 10 goals in 17 games since being acquired in a trade from Pittsburgh. And Daniil Tarasov had 45 saves in net in the win. And the Kraken down the Sharks in San Jose 4-2. Oliver Bjorkstrand gets his 20th. Shane Wright, the former first-round draft pick called up, gets his first goal of the season.
Well, obviously the playoff preview between the Maple Leafs and the Panthers was a doozy potential. Playoff preview. Two of the best in the East going head-to-head, and it was an offensive display for both teams. Neither team had to be happy with the way they defended or the way their goalies played. Ilya Samsonov did get the win, but didn't look great in the process, giving up four goals. But Sergei Bobrovsky chased after two periods, giving up five goals on just 16 shots. That's stinky. And Anthony Stolarz came in and played a good third period, but it was too little too late. Obviously, the offensive talent on the ice for these two teams is through the roof, and they don't even have Mitch Marner for the Maple Leafs. He's been out for a while. He's going to be out the rest of this week. It is a lot of talent, though, on the offensive. And when you watch this and you see Vladimir Tarasenko scoring 3 points for the Florida Panthers, in addition to Sam Reinhart, in addition to Matthew Tkachuk, in addition to Carter Verhaeghe, you can see the waves that this team can come at. And Sasha Barkov. This team can come at you in waves offensively. And then you look at the other side, and you talked about the season that Austin Matthews is having with over 60 goals already. And he also has a lot of help in William Nylander and John Tavares. And when the playoffs start, Mitch Marner will be back. And these are two teams that can score in bunches. They did it in this one. Fun to watch, but the coaches were no doubt sweating it out. The Kings' loss to the Jets was concerning because you thought after the loss to the Flames, in which they played pretty poorly, they would rebound with a better effort. They did not. Well, it was a better effort, but it wasn't good enough. Cam Talbot, again, not on top of his game. Be interesting to see who they go with in their next outing. But Winnipeg needed this win, got it. They had to feel good about themselves. Cole Perfetti hated the Jets jerseys, by the way. Absolutely. Ugh. Did not like these at all. I don't know about you, Eddie, but did not like the Jets look.
I thought they were okay. Was a light blue with red is certainly not what we're used to, but I did the jerseys themselves. I thought they were
all right. And it was a good game. You know, the Jets needed the points. They got them. Cole Perfetti, like I said, third period goal to get the win. Pierre-Luc Dubois in his one of many returns to Winnipeg, did not make them miss him, I didn't think. Did not think, damn, how did we let this guy get away? But I was kind of disappointed in Akil Thomas's debut. He made his NHL debut. It's a guy that I talked to many years ago when he was a prospect with the Kings at one of their rookie camps. And have always kind of followed because I had a good conversation with him back then. And he makes his NHL debut, and he plays 3 minutes and 42 seconds. And Arthur Kaliev, a prospect or a young player for the Kings that had a goal, I believe, in the game against Calgary, played 3 minutes and 29 seconds. And I get shortening the bench. I don't get not playing two guys for more than 6-7 minutes combined in an entire game. You got fresh legs in the third period. And I thought it's not that important of a game to me. This isn't the playoffs. This is the time you can get those guys some experience. So I was disappointed in that, but good for him that he got to make his debut. And then the final game was Pittsburgh's 5-2 win over the Rangers, an impressive win from a team that's not going to make the playoffs in the Pittsburgh Penguins. And I don't really want to focus on too much other than Sidney Crosby is still an absolutely amazing elite player. In his last five games, he has 11 points. He has 5 goals. He is closing in on 1,000 career assists. He is still one of the top players in the league. He's going to have a 40-goal season, most likely. He's going to have a 90-point season, most likely. This guy at 36 and will be 37 next season is still elite and doing everything he can, even in games that are essentially meaningless. And that kind of leadership and skill is to be respected and admired.
Hear, hear. Let's wrap it up with Tuesday. We had 8 games. We'll start with the Capitals losing to the Sabres 6-2. J.J. Paterka, 2 goals for Buffalo, numbers 27 and 28 in the season for him. Tage Thompson is 27th as well. Charlie Lindgren for Washington allowed 6 goals on 31 shots before getting pulled. And Buffalo's Jeff Skinner played in his 1,000th NHL game and made history in the process. He is the only player in the NHL to have played in 1,000 regular season games while playing in 0 playoff games. Wow.
Yeah, that is a
record you would not want to have. But
100%. I mean, my goodness. You got to think at some point he wants to be, at the end of his contract, he wants to be traded to a team that is guaranteed to make the playoffs so that he can experience it at least once. But my goodness, that's quite the distinction. Mm.
Islanders got by the Blackhawks 2-1. Simon Holmstrom, who is a someone I'm not familiar with, but he gets the game-winning goal for New York. Bo Horvat added his 31st, and Elias Sorokin had 18 saves in net in the win as New York moved a point back of Washington for that last wildcard spot in the East. Penguins down the Devils in New Jersey 6-3, down 3-1 in the third. Pittsburgh scored 4 unanswered goals. Sidney Crosby had 2 of them, numbers 38 and 39. Evgeny Malkin had a pair, numbers 22 and 23. And believe it or not, Pittsburgh is 3 points back of Washington for a wildcard spot in the East, which is surprising. Panthers fall to the Canadiens 5-3. Nick Suzuki, 2 goals for Montreal, numbers 31 and 32, as Florida dropped 8 of their last 10 games at that point. Bruins blank the Predators in Nashville 3-0. Linus Ullmark, 32 saves in the shutout for Boston. David Pastrnak added his 46th of the year. Golden Knights defeat the Canucks 6-3. Vegas 4 first-period goals. Jonathan Marchessault gets his 41st, and Noah Hanifin scored his first goal as a member of the Golden Knights. Wild get by the Senators 3-2. Vinny Lettieri, game-winning goal in the third period for Minnesota. And the Ducks defeat the Flames in Calgary 5-3. Alex Killorn had 2 goals, numbers 16 and 17. Troy Terry gets his 20th for Anaheim. In the loss, Andre Kuzmenko for Calgary, 2 goals, 16 and 17 for him. And that was the week that was on the ice in the NHL.
The only game I want to mention from that day was the Canucks Golden Knights game, which again, I thought exemplified the difference between the Canucks with Thatcher Demko and without Thatcher Demko. Casey DeSmith got absolutely lit up immediately. I mean, a minute 37 in, Vegas scores from Anthony Mantha, 2-0 very quickly. They get back in it with a goal from Nils Höglander, and then immediately Jack Eichel scores to make it 3-1, and it's 4-1 by the end of the first, and the game is over at that point. So I think with Thatcher Demko, they're in that game. Without him, they're not. And they need him back. He should be back for the playoffs. But it just really shows the difference between the Canucks with and without him. And it shows that the Vegas Golden Knights, who were not playing well for a long time this season and were just kind of there, seem to be a team that now knows when to kick it in. And, of course, they're going to be getting their captain back. Stone will be back in the playoffs, miraculously healed, and look for him in game one. But they're starting to hit their stride and playing well. They have not had Tomas Hertl yet. We could see him in the near future, but they're going to add players and they're already playing well. And that is they're starting to hit their stride at the right time. And that's what a veteran team that has had playoff experience in the past does, is they know the games that matter. They know when to kick it into high gear. And this is the time, and they are showing it right now.
All right, let us get to the standings, and we're going to go more in-depth into some of these races in the second period. So, Doug, I will ask you to hold any predictions you have as far as players are going to finish where, but we'll give you the standings with 15 games left in the NHL regular season as we record this. The regular season ends on April the 18th. We'll start in the East, and in the Metropolitan Division, it is the same three that we had a week ago, although Philadelphia is holding on to that third spot by their fingertips. But New York Rangers, 104 points, most in the NHL, leading the Metro. Carolina Hurricanes, 3 points back with 101 points. Both those teams have clinched playoff spots. And then you've got Philadelphia far behind with 83 points, 1 point up on Washington in the Metropolitan Division. In the Atlantic, you've got the same top three we've had for most of the year. Boston is on top with 103 points. Florida has 99 points in second place. Both those teams have clinched playoff spots. Toronto, 95 points, on the verge of clinching a playoff spot. Your two wildcard teams in the East are the same as they were a week ago. Tampa Bay, 89 points. They're 6 points now back of Toronto for the third spot in the Atlantic. And then you've got Washington as the number two wildcard team with 82 points. Again, 1 point back at Philadelphia. Now, they are tied in points with Detroit. Detroit has 82 as well, but they're the first team on the outside looking in right now because the Capitals have the tiebreaker. The Islanders have 81 points, so they're right there as well. And then you've got Pittsburgh, believe it or not, with 79 points, still hanging around in the wildcard race. Over in the West, in the Central Division, you've got the same top three as a week ago. Dallas, most points in the Western Conference with 103. Colorado, 100 points. They're in second place. Both those teams have clinched playoff spots. Winnipeg in third place with 96 points. In the Pacific, we had Vancouver still on top. They've got 100 points. They have clinched a playoff spot as well. They are 3 points back of Dallas in the race for the top spot in the Western Conference. Edmonton is in second place with 95 points, so 5 points back of Vancouver. And then Vegas has moved in to the number three spot in the Pacific, up from the number two wildcard spot. They've got 92 points on the season. Your two wildcard teams in the West are Nashville with 90 points. They're 6 points back of Winnipeg for third in the Central. And then LA has the number two wildcard spot, 87 points, dropping down from third place in the Pacific Division. Two wildcard teams in the West two teams looking to try and get into the final wildcard spot in the West. You've got St. Louis with 84 points. 3 points back of LA for the last wildcard spot. And then I'll mention Minnesota, but they're not really. 81 points for the Wild, 6 points out of a final wildcard spot. As far as the playoff matchups, exactly the same as they were a week ago in the East. You've got the Rangers versus the Capitals, Bruins versus the Lightning, Panthers versus the Maple Leafs, and Hurricanes versus the Flyers. There was a bit of a change in the West. You've got LA versus Dallas. That's a new matchup from a week ago. Vancouver versus Nashville, the same as last week. Colorado versus Winnipeg, the same as last week. And now you would have Edmonton versus Las Vegas in a matchup which is different than a week ago.
You said you didn't want me to say anything, so.
No, I didn't say I didn't want you to say anything. I just said don't make any. I asked you to hold off on any predictions for where you think anyone's going to finish. If you have something to say other than that, then feel free. If not.
My comment is your math is exactly correct. We will discuss this all in the second period.
That is, for my math to be correct, that is quite a feat, because
there was no math to be done. You read the standings. But no, it's...
Why'd you say math then?
You reading the stats was correct. How's okay. that?
Well, that's
the East is very interesting.
What I'm going striving for, accuracy.
The West is not. We know the eight in the West, barring an absolute disaster of some sort. We know the eight in the West, and we'll get into that in a second. It's the East that is very interesting, because there's so much still to be determined, and some teams making some late runs. I said the Penguins won't make it. We'll see, but we'll get into all of this in the second period.
All right. Not a lot of news this week, but we will pass along the news that we have. Law and Order report. We had a couple of suspensions. Ryan Hartman of the Minnesota Wild gets a 3-game suspension. He was on the bench, but it's interesting. Both these suspensions were players on the bench. Hartman was on the bench. He was upset about a call or a non-call, and he decided to throw a stick on the ice javelin style, or I don't know, spear style, towards a referee. It never really got close to him, but obviously you can't throw a stick on the ice like that in the direction of a referee. So he gets a 3-game suspension for that. And then Montreal's Caden Gooley was on the bench when he slashed Philadelphia's Travis Konecny while he was on the ice, and he got a 1-game suspension for that. So obviously you can't do silly things like that while you're on the bench. I'm surprised he actually didn't get more than 1 game for usually when you're like on the bench and you do something like that, it usually anyway. Any comments on either of those things?
I guess the Ryan Hartman one, as you said, it wasn't a real threat to hit the ref or do any damage to him. So I thought 3 games was a bit much. A game, maybe 2, but I thought that was a bit much. I guess you'd have to do 2 because you get a 1-game suspension if you just skip the All-Star game. And this is worse than that. I guess the lesson is don't throw anything onto the ice from the bench. And if you do, you can expect to be suspended.
Yeah, don't do anything on the bench while, you know, to some.
And yet, if you, the other lesson is when you're told to leave the bench, John Tortorella. So he gets suspended, right, for not leaving the bench. And Ryan Hartman gets suspended for not leaving the bench. And that is what it is. It's just you can't throw things onto the ice, even if it's not a danger to anybody. It's just the act of throwing something is unacceptable.
ER report, surprisingly not a lot of injuries to report on. We did have a Marcus Foligno of the Wild. He underwent core muscle surgery and he's done for the rest of the season, which is, you know, obviously not long, but anyway, they expect him to be ready for training camp next season. So it's certainly not nothing. There you go. Mitch Marner for the Maple Leafs. You mentioned him. They did place him on long-term injured reserve. Now that is retroactive to March the 7th. So it was probably a move made for salary cap reasons, not necessarily.
Yeah, it was
anything
to call somebody up.
Yeah. Panthers defenseman Aaron Ekblad returning to the lineup. He had missed 7 games with a lower body injury. And you mentioned him, Tomas Hertl, back on the ice for the Vegas Golden Knights. He has yet to play a game for Vegas after being picked up at the trade deadline. He's been out following knee surgery on February the 12th, but it is expected he will make his Vegas debut. And we will talk about it on next week's show. It's coming up here sometime soon for Vegas. This week is expected. Some couple of random shots before we close it out. Doug, are you keeping track? I'm guessing you're not, but I don't know this because maybe you've got a Ducks prospect playing on one of these teams. But are you aware the Frozen Four is set in college hockey?
Watching that more than I'm watching the NHL.
Okay, I was going to ask you to guess who the four teams are because this has become kind of like women's college basketball, where before the season starts, you can kind of predict who the teams are going to be because it seems like it's the same group of teams every time. So you got Denver and Boston University. There's always going to be a Boston team involved, right? And matter of fact, there's two of them, Boston College and Michigan. It always seems like Michigan's involved as well. That's your Frozen Four in men's college hockey.
Well, the defending champ, Quinnipiac, which I love the name. They lost to Boston College in a thriller, in the Elite Eight, I guess. So yeah, the Frozen Four is set. Boston College is the number one team in the nation and are the prohibitive favorites. They're going to be playing Michigan in that one. And then Denver Boston should be a doozy as well. Yes. I am very much following these. These are great games. Fun to watch.
The national semifinals are April the 11th and the national championship is on April the 13th. And there's only so much time I can devote to certain things. So I don't know the details of this, although I saw it and it did pique my curiosity, but I just didn't have time to look into it. But the Newfoundland Growlers of the ECHL, a Maple Leafs affiliate, they have ceased operations. Look, it's minor league hockey, so I guess finances, but I mean, the season's almost over. I mean, you can't finish the season, but anyway, everyone on their roster is now a free agent. Any players that are under NHL or AHL contracts are being sent back to their affiliated clubs, and any of those players will not be able to play any more ECHL games this season, but the Newfoundland Growlers are going goodbye. They're being put down.
Well, that sucks for the fans of that team, for the players of that team, for the employees of that organization, for everybody. That sucks. It's sorry to hear that. We did have, you mentioned the college games, and we did have a lot of signings this past week, and a lot of guys that played in college, their season is now over, meaning they are eligible to sign contracts. So a lot of these guys, that's where they're coming from, but not all of them. So let's get to the signings from this past week. In case one of your favorite teams made a signing of a player you may recognize, Lukas Dragicevic. He signed a three-way. Thank you. He signed a two-way entry-level contract with the Seattle Kraken. Simone Benoit signed a three-year deal, standard deal, a contract extension with the Toronto Maple Leafs for $4.05 million. So he's going to be well paid. The Ducks signed a trio of prospects, Nico Mijatovic, Colson Petre, and Yegor Sidorov, all signed with the Ducks on entry-level deals. The Nashville Predators were able to sign Ryan Ufko, U-F-K-O, great name, right-handed defenseman. He's signed to an entry-level contract. Olivier Rodrigue signed with the Edmonton Oilers. He's a goalie. Ty Mueller signed with the Vancouver Canucks. Jacob Quillen signed with the Maple Leafs as well. Jackson Nelson, and that's J-A-X-O-N Nelson, signed with the Boston Bruins on a two-way deal. He's a centerman. Cooper Black, a goalie for the Florida Panthers, has been signed. The Rangers signed two guys, Vittorio Mancini, definitely a New York type of name, and Kaije Väisänen, also signed, both young prospects that they were able to lock up. Scott Morrow was signed by the Carolina Panthers yesterday, and the other signing so far today is the Seattle Kraken have signed Victor Ostman, to a goalie prospect, to a two-year or a two-way entry-level contract as well. Oh, I forgot, of course, my apologies to Nick Lardis, the 18-year-old that signed a two-year or a two-way deal with the Chicago Blackhawks. Our goalie horn this week comes courtesy, well, it may not because Eddie's microphone has gone kaput, but if he gets his microphone working again, the goalie horn will be coming courtesy of the Detroit Red Wings.
Top of the second period here on the Puck Podcast. And I thought with a month to go in the season and the playoff races, if you will, really heating up, it might do us some good to kind of examine a little more closely a lot of the races. So we're going to start with the race for the top seed in the Eastern Conference and for first place in the Metropolitan Division, kind of combining the two here. The New York Rangers right now are leading the division, also leading the Eastern Conference as well. They are 3 points up on Carolina and Boston as far as the top seed in the East, and also holding on to a – hold on 1 second as I double-check this –
What are you looking for? I have it all in front of me.
What is their lead on Carolina? Is it 3 points?
Three points on the Panthers, the Metro? On the Hurricanes, with exactly the same number of games left. So yes, three points.
So the Rangers have 7 games left. So does Carolina. Boston with 6 games left.
Yep.
No head-to-head matchups against Carolina or Boston for the Rangers. As far as Carolina and Boston, they do play each other twice more. The rest of the way. For the Rangers, 7-3 in their last 10 games. Boston is 6-4. Carolina 8-1-1 in their last 10 games. Are the Rangers going to hold on to the top spot in the East and the first spot in the Metro?
I would say yes, only because 3 points is a pretty decent gap to catch and pass in 7 games. It's of course possible, but without a head-to-head, you're relying on other teams. I don't think it really matters too much, though. Either team is going to play an absolute cupcake in the first round on paper. You're either going to be playing the Capitals or the Flyers or the Red Wings or the Islanders or maybe the Penguins. Or maybe if lightning strikes, the Sabres. Or maybe if really lightning strikes, the Devils. My point is you're not playing a top contender. The real push is to stay ahead of Boston for first overall in the East, because if you don't, then you have to play the Tampa Bay Lightning, and they are a dangerous team in the first round simply because of their veteran talent, elite talent, and experience in the postseason. So I would think that'll keep the Rangers. If I'm Carolina, I don't think I push too hard to catch and pass the Rangers. I'm very comfortable playing either the Flyers or the Capitals in the first round, and then taking my chances in the second round. I would not want that first round matchup to be against Tampa Bay if I could avoid it. So I will say the Rangers do hold on to number one in the Metropolitan, and the push for them is to make sure they are the number one team in the East overall to avoid playing Tampa in the first round.
All right, let's check in on the race for the top seed in the West and the top record in the Central Division, kind of combining them as well. Dallas Stars have a 3-point lead on Colorado. Both have 7 points remaining. They do play head-to-head one more time this coming Sunday. So if you're looking for a game on Sunday to watch, might want to check in on the Stars Avalanche. According to the website tankathon.com, which rates the strength of schedule for teams, the Avalanche have the toughest remaining schedule left in the NHL. Dallas right now has an 8-2 record in their last 10. Colorado 7-2-1. So obviously both teams playing pretty well at this point. Vancouver also, by the way, has 100 points, as do the Avalanche. So if you're talking about top overall record in the West, Vancouver needs to be included in there. They're not playing Colorado or Dallas the rest of the way. So your thoughts on top seed in the West and top team in the Central?
Well, I think Dallas, obviously, like I said, same reason with the Rangers and the Hurricanes. 3 points is a decent gap to catch and pass over the course of just 7 games. So Dallas has an incentive to hold off Colorado if at all possible. That game on Sunday is going to be crucial. If Dallas wins that game in regulation, it's a wrap. If they don't, if Colorado wins that game in regulation or just gets the game to overtime, then the battle continues. So that's going to be a very fun one to watch. Must-see TV for me. But Dallas would be incentivized to win the division and have that number one overall spot, because I think it's obviously an easier path to take on a wild card team in the first round and let Colorado and Winnipeg beat each other up potentially for in that first round, and then take on whoever wins that. So I think there's an incentive. Vancouver's not going to catch and pass either team in the Central. Thatcher Demko is still out. I realize that they have an easier schedule than Colorado, but I don't see them ending up with 100, and they have 7 games left as well. I don't see them ending up with 108, 109, 110 points, which I think is what it's going to take to be the number one seed in the West. So I would think Dallas holds it off, Colorado second, and then Winnipeg third.
As far as the tiebreakers, Colorado has 39 regulation wins. Vancouver's got 40, and Dallas has 36. So Dallas does not have the tiebreaker if it comes to that. And just kind of backtracking in the East, the Rangers have 39 regulation wins, as do the Hurricanes. Boston, 34 regulation wins. And for Dallas, Colorado, and Vancouver, they've all played 75 games on the season, so they all have the same number of games left going forward. How about first place in the Atlantic Division between Boston and Florida? Right now, it is Boston by 4 points on the Panthers. Both have 6 games left. They do have one head-to-head matchup coming up this Saturday. Boston does have the easier schedule looking ahead. The Bruins are 6-4 in their last 10. Florida 2-7-1 in their last 10 games right now.
Yeah, that's the wrong matchup to look at. That's the wrong race to look at. Boston has won the East, or won the Atlantic. The matchup to look at is, will Toronto pass Florida for second place and have home ice advantage in their first round matchup? Because it's going to be those two teams playing each other. And Florida has absolutely belly flopped lately. Toronto has been playing well, and I think there's an incentive for Toronto with 2 games in hand and only 4 points behind. They can catch and pass Florida. They control their own destiny. So I think that's the race to look at in the Atlantic. Is that
And you're jumping the gun here, because I have that matchup coming up in just a minute here. But
Boston's going to win the East, the Atlantic Division, I should say. And I would be very surprised if that did not happen.
All right, let's check in on the race for first place in the Pacific. Vancouver with a 5-point lead on Edmonton. The Canucks have 7 games left. The Oilers have 9 games left. They do have one head-to-head matchup coming up. That'll be next Saturday, April the 13th. Vancouver 5-4-1 in their last 10, while Edmonton is 6-2-2. So 2 games in hand for the Oilers. Do you see them having a chance to catch Vancouver for the top spot in the Pacific?
Oh, absolutely. And that's the emphasis of getting Thatcher Demko back. If he's not back by that game next Saturday, I think that game is going to be for first place in the Pacific Division. And Edmonton, looking at the potential of winning a division title and getting to play a wild card team as opposed to the defending Stanley Cup champions in the first round, is a huge incentive to them. And they want to hit the playoffs with momentum. So I think they're going to be going all out these last 9 games. It is a tough schedule. It's a lot of games in a short amount of time, but they have young players, young skill players. They went and got depth at the deadline specifically for this kind of a run. I didn't think they had a chance at a division title, but now looking at it, obviously they do. 2 games in hand, 5 points back. You win those 2 games. Now you're 1 point back with each of you having 7 games to play, and one of them is a head-to-head game. So it's there for Edmonton if they want to take it. I think they're in control of their own destiny. And I think I like their chances based on the way Vancouver has really fallen off in the second half of the season from their torrid pace. They do have 100 points. They do have the playoff position clinched, but I don't think they're going to win the division when it's all said and done. I think it's Edmonton first, Vancouver second.
And that game between the Canucks and the Oilers next Saturday is in Edmonton. Vancouver does have 40 regulation wins compared to Edmonton's 35. How about home ice advantage in the Atlantic and that 2-3 matchup? You've got Florida, as you mentioned earlier, a 4-point lead on Toronto. The Panthers have 6 games left. Toronto has 8 games left, so 2 games in hand for the Maple Leafs. They do have one head-to-head matchup coming up next Tuesday, April the 16th. For Toronto, they are 6-3-1 in their last 10. We mentioned Florida just 2-7-1 in their last 10 games. Your thoughts on who gets home ice advantage and the second spot in the Atlantic?
Just rewind a little bit, and I think that's my comments. But when it's all said and done, I do think Florida will hold them off. It's just Toronto would have to be on a real run here at the end. And they've played well, but I think Florida still has enough talent to right the ship here in these last 6 games, bank some wins, and I think that game that they play against each other will be the determining factor. But when it's all said and done, I think Florida will hold them off for second and home ice advantage in that first round. But that's also going to be a playoff preview. Florida, having made the long run next year, realizes home ice advantage isn't all that important. They were an 8 seed last year, and they made it to the Stanley Cup final. So I don't think they're going to put too much emphasis on holding off Toronto, but they do want to hit the playoffs with momentum. And I think those wins will be enough to get them into the second spot.
That Panthers Maple Leafs matchup is the final regular season game for the Panthers. And that will be in Sunrise, Florida. As far as the battle for home ice in the first round in the Metro between Carolina and Philadelphia, the Hurricanes have an 18-point lead on the Flyers. So if Carolina does finish in second where they are now, yes, they will have home ice advantage, but 18-point lead on the third-place team.
The thing that's interesting about the East, and I'll just say compared to the West, is there's one legitimately bad team in the Eastern Conference, and that's Columbus. There are 3 legitimately bad teams in the West, and they're the 3 worst teams in the entire NHL: San Jose, Chicago, and Anaheim. So if you're good in the East, you've earned your points, because there are no easy nights. There's a lot of easy nights in the Pacific, in the West, and especially in the Pacific Division, as we will talk about as we continue.
How about the race for home ice in the Central in that 2-3 matchup? You've got Colorado with a 4-point lead on Winnipeg. Both teams have 7 games left. There is one head-to-head matchup between the two. That is next Saturday, April the 13th. Colorado 7-2-1 in their last 10. Winnipeg, as we mentioned, I believe earlier, 4-5-1 in their last 10.
Yeah, the Central is very much like the Metropolitan in that the two teams at the top are going to finish 1-2. It's just a matter of which team wins the division, which team is second. So we're not going to see Winnipeg catch and pass Colorado for second in this division, and they're sure as hell not going to catch and pass Dallas. So Winnipeg is going to be the three spot. In fact, they could, if they don't take care of their business, fall into a wild card spot. That is still possible with Nashville 6 point out, though Nashville has lost three straight. So most likely Winnipeg will be third, and either Colorado or Dallas is going to win. The other team is going to be second with home ice advantage against Winnipeg in that first round.
And that Colorado-Winnipeg matchup will be in Denver. In that head-to-head meeting. How about home ice in the Pacific, the 2-3 matchup between Edmonton and Vegas as it stands right now? I know you mentioned earlier you think that the Oilers can overtake Winnipeg, but let's just talk about what the matchup is at the moment. A 3-point lead for the Oilers on Vegas, 9 games left for Edmonton, 7 games left for Vegas, 1 head-to-head matchup. That's next Wednesday, April the 10th. Oilers are 6-2-2 in their last 10, Vegas 7-2-1.
Well, I think the incentive is to Edmonton. They need to put themselves in the best position to succeed. That is winning the division, and that's why I think they're going to go all out to try and do so. Maybe to their detriment, you know, you maybe want to manage minutes a little bit better for your squad in the stretch run here, and realize that the second season, the playoffs, are what really matters. But I think it's a team that is desperate for a deep playoff run and wants to win the division if at all possible. So I think they're going to go all out for that. And I think that's going to be enough for them to hold off the Golden Knights. They have the games in hand and a 3-point lead. They've won 6 of their last 10. When you put it all together, I think Edmonton is either going to be the division champion or second place. Vegas is pretty much locked in at number 3, though it is possible they could drop back down to a wild card because of strength of schedule and what we're about to talk about with the wild card.
By the way, Edmonton, Vegas, that game is in Edmonton again next Wednesday. As far as regulation wins, Oilers have 35. Vegas has 32. How about the third spot in the East as far as the number one wildcard team? Philadelphia with a 1-point lead on Washington. Flyers have 6 games left. Washington has 8. There is one head-to-head matchup coming up. That's the final game of the season for Philadelphia. They will host Washington on Tuesday, April the 16th. For the Flyers in their last 10, 2-5-3 for Washington, 6-3-1.
Well, I forget that. I think it's more of a, it's a whole playoff matchup. I think you got to include the whole picture, but that last game could be obviously massive and could be a win and you're in kind of a situation for an automatic playoff berth. The fact that Washington is even in this position is remarkable. And you talk about the teams with the tiebreaker and how many wins they have. Both these teams have 28 regulation wins. That's not a lot. You're 74 games in, and only 28 times did you win in regulation. That means for over 40 games, you either lost or had to go to overtime to get there. And both of them have a lot of overtime and shootout losses. 11 for the Flyers, 10 for the Capitals to keep their playoff hopes relevant. So that I have no idea what's going to happen in this because these are two completely unpredictable teams. But I didn't think the Flyers would be in this position. I didn't think the Capitals would be in this position. I'm amazed that both of them have a playoff chance, and it's both control their own destiny. Both are way down in goal differential. Capitals have a minus 35. Flyers have a minus 17. They're the only teams in either conference that are in a playoff spot with a negative goal differential. That's the biggest indicator. When you look at the standings, you can look very clearly. In the West, 8 teams have a positive goal differential. All of them are in a playoff spot. 8 teams have a negative goal differential. All of them are going to miss the playoffs. In the East, 8 teams have a positive goal differential, and 6 of them are in the playoffs. The 2 that don't are the Detroit Red Wings and the Pittsburgh Penguins. And they're both on the outside looking in. So it's a clear indicator. You score more goals than the other team for all the metrics and all the analytics. It's still that simple. Score more than the other teams do, and you're probably going to make the playoffs.
All right. How about the race for third in the Pacific or a wild card spot? That would be Vegas and LA. Vegas right now with a 5-point lead on the Kings. The Golden Knights have 7 games left. LA has 8. There are no head-to-head matchups going forward. Vegas 7-2-1 in their last 10. As we mentioned, the Kings are 5-5 over their last 10, but they do have the easiest schedule remaining in the NHL, which we'll talk maybe a little bit more about in a moment as well. But you like Vegas for that third spot in the Pacific, and the Kings to be a wild card.
You said they obviously don't have a head-to-head anymore because correct. The Kings don't play anybody any good anymore.
Yeah, Vancouver.
They play Vancouver, but they'll beat them. As we talked about, their 1-3-1 frustrates them, and they know how to do it. So anyway, the Kings are going to end up with 99 points, I think, on the season, at least, maybe 100. And Vegas has their work cut out for them to get to that. So I don't think it's a lock that Vegas is third. I think that's very much in play for the Kings. The Kings' schedule is very favorable, and the fact that the Kings are the team, like, you know, and look, I'm going to talk about your favorite team. You cover them on a daily basis. The Kings against playoff caliber teams, the teams that are in a playoff position right now, are not good at all. They're 14-17-7 this season, so 14 wins in 38 games. But against non-playoff teams, which is who they're playing the rest of the way for the most part, they're 24-7-5. So they're going to – they're the best team. They make their money where they should. They beat the teams they should. They lose to the teams they should. And that's kind of where they are. But that's going to be good enough, I think, to get them in the race for number three. Because when you have 99 points, maybe 100, that puts you in that position to be in a top three spot in your division. And it would certainly change their playoff matchup. If I was the Kings, depending on how the Canucks and Oilers thing goes, I'd basically be trying to play the Canucks if I could in the first round. If that means staying where I am or passing Nashville to play to be the number one wild card, I would try and do that. If that means getting to third so that I can play Vancouver if they fall down to second, I would do that. Because that's the playoff matchup the Kings can win. If they play anybody else in the first round, I don't like their chances. So that would be the matchup I would be looking for if I was the Kings. And I know you can't call your shot, but beat Vancouver in regulation to give Edmonton the boost and then take advantage of all the patsies you have the rest of the way.
As far as the two wildcard positions in the East, Tampa Bay has got a 7-point lead on Washington, so there's no competition there. In the West, Nashville has a 3-point lead on LA. As far as who's the number one and number two wildcard teams at the moment, Nashville 7 games left, LA 8, no head-to-head matchups. Predators 6-3-1 in their last 10.
I do think the Predators are going to end up as the second wildcard team when it's all said and done. They're not going to catch Winnipeg, and the Kings are going to blow right past them in these last 2 weeks.
All right, then our final couple of looks here are for the final wildcard spots in the East and the West. In the East, Washington is tied with Detroit. They're 1 point up on the Islanders. The Capitals have 8 games left. Detroit and New York both have 7, so the Caps do have a game in hand. Washington does play at Detroit on Tuesday, April the 9th. They do not play Washington the rest of the way. Washington does not have a game against the Islanders. As far as the regulation wins for the tiebreaker, the Capitals have 28. Detroit has 26. The Islanders have 24.
Is there a reason you're not including the Penguins in this?
I mean, yes, I don't think. I mean, they're technically around. But I think it's a three-team race for the final wildcard spot. If you're more than welcome to include Pittsburgh in that if you want, but I just included the Islanders and the Red Wings.
Well, if you group the teams together and you say which of these teams is the best, the Penguins, the Islanders, the Red Wings, and the Capitals, the Penguins are the best team on paper. And I think when it's all said and done, I think they are going to make the playoffs. I think Pittsburgh has a good chance to catch and pass these teams because I don't respect the Islanders much at all. I don't think they're a very good team. 15 overtime or shootout losses, only 24 regulation wins through 75 games. 51 times they've either lost or had to go to an overtime or a shootout to win. So I don't respect them. I don't think they're going to make it. Red Wings have been absolutely Jekyll and Hyde this season. I can't predict them. I think the Capitals are going to catch and pass Philadelphia when it's all said and done for that third spot in the Metropolitan. And then it comes down to Pittsburgh and Philadelphia for that final playoff spot. I think Pittsburgh's got a chance. I know that they have been inconsistent all season, But Sidney Crosby is almost single-handedly leading them right now to victory. And we've seen it from him these last 5, 10, or 2 weeks. He's been on an absolute tear. And I like their chances to make a run here. Now, one or two losses is enough. They play, their next game is against Washington tomorrow night on April 4th. Yeah.
Pittsburgh has a head-to-head game against each of those teams. They've got a game against Washington, a game against Detroit, and a game against the Islanders.
Yep. And win those games, and you'll take care of your business. Now, they also have games against tough teams like Tampa, like Toronto, like Boston, like Nashville, all playoff-caliber teams. So they have a very tough schedule, but I think they're going to be energized by the fact that they control their own fate. They are, if they win that game tomorrow night against Washington in regulation, that gives them 81 points. They still have a chance. They will be 1 point out of a wild card spot potentially. And I think the energy in that room will realize that everything that we've been, you know, they've been the most disappointing team of the regular season with the roster that they built. It's still there for them, and that potential is there. So I think they're included and have a good chance. When it's all said and done, I have absolutely no idea which of these five teams is going to make it, because none of them have been consistent enough for me to believe in over the course of the next 2 weeks, even a short time like 7 games. And we talk about this all the time when we look at the playoffs and how you and I would break it down as a head coach. This is what we're talking about. If you're the Penguins, the Islanders, the Red Wings, the Capitals, or the Flyers, you look at these the end of the regular season as a playoff series. We got 7 games. We need to win 5 of them. We need to win 4 of them. We need to win this series, get into playoff mode right now. And that's why they're dangerous. Whoever does make the playoffs will already be in that mentality, whereas the Bruins, the Rangers, the Hurricanes, they will be coming at it a little bit cold and have to get to that mentality very quickly.
And finally, the race for the final wildcard spot in the West. LA currently holds the number 2 wildcard spot, 3 points up on St. Louis, which is the first team on the outside looking in. Kings have a game in hand. They've got 8 games left. St. Louis has 7 as we record this. There are no head-to-head games between the two. The Blues are 7-2-1 in their last 10. We mentioned the Kings are 5-5. LA has 32 regulation wins to St. Louis's 29.
The race is not between St. Louis and LA. The race is between Nashville and LA, or Nashville and St. Louis. And I say that because the Kings are going to, as we said, they're going to get at least 6 wins in their remaining games, 5 or 6 wins. So that puts it out of reach. But the Blues and the Predators play tomorrow night. So if you're looking for a doubleheader, watch that Bruins or the Penguins Capitals game and watch the Blues Predators game. Because if the Blues can win that game in regulation, now suddenly it's a 4-point gap between them and the Predators with 6 games to play. Still a steep hill to climb, but doable. Whereas if the Predators win that game in regulation, it's a wrap and the Predators will make the playoffs. But we've seen, look, the Predators went on in a historic run, 18 straight games with points. And they end the season with some patsies in the Blackhawks and the Blue Jackets. But in between then, they play the Islanders, who are battling for a playoff spot. The Devils, who are a good team, even though they're disappointing. The Jets, a playoff team. And they end with the Penguins in a game that could be very important to Pittsburgh. So it's not unbelievable for me to think that St. Louis could make a run and catching and passing the Predators. They will not catch and pass the Kings, though. And if you look at the Blues schedule, it is very similar to the Kings. They have that game against the Nashville Predators tomorrow night. Then they play the Sharks and Ducks and Blackhawks. That's 6 points in the bank. Guarantee it.
Well, so they did get shut out. They got shut out by the Blues this past week, though. So,
well, look, the Kings got beat by the Sharks earlier this year. There are one-offs. I get what you're saying. But if they beat the Predators in regulation, they've got 3 very winnable games following that. Then they end the season with 3 games. 2 of them are going to be very difficult, Carolina and Dallas. The other one against Seattle, also not exactly a layup. But if they're in a position going into those 3 to control their own destiny or fight for a playoff spot, it'll be very interesting to see what they can do.
Time of the third and final period here on the Puck Podcast. I want to give a quick shout out to all of our friends over on Patreon and say thank you. We appreciate you and all of your support of this show. If you would like to become a supporter on Patreon, patreon.com/puckpodcast. And also want to give a shout out not only to our guy Dave at Tally Custom Hockey Jerseys, but want to say thank you and hello to Kendrick Beach in Portage, Wisconsin, who ordered himself a Puck Podcast hockey jersey to proudly wear there in the Wisconsin area. I was going to say he's in the state of Wisconsin. I'm not sure exactly where in the state Portage is, but wearing it to proudly out to his local hockey rinks and around town and whatnot. So we thank you, Kendrick, for supporting the Puck Podcast. If you would like to get a Puck Podcast jersey of your very own, go to tallycustomhockeyjerseys.com. Click on the Puck Podcast team store, and you can see all of the amazing items that are available from our friend Dave, whether it's the multiple styles of hats, you can get yourself a beanie, and of course, there's four different styles of jerseys that Kendrick purchased as well. Let me check, I got a text from Dave telling me about this. I don't know if he said what style of jersey. He got a black jersey. So Kendrick got the black Puck Podcast jersey. So we thank him for that. And also, if you have any need for custom hockey jerseys, you need to go to check out our guy, Dave, tallycustomhockeyjerseys.com. All kinds of different colors and styles. You can even create your own custom logo for your very own special hockey jersey. And also the Puck Podcast merchandise available there. Thank you, Dave. And thank you, Kendrick. All right.
Let's get it. Portage, Wisconsin, right off the Wisconsin River.
Okay.
Not far from Partyville.
Partyville.
Yep. That's where they all go for spring break.
Is it P-A-R-T-Y or D-Y?
It's pronounced T-Y, but it's D-E-E, Pardeeville. But Partyville. If that's not the party capital of Wisconsin, I don't know what the hell they're doing there. But are you familiar with the Wisconsin Dells? Have you heard of that before?
I'm sorry?
The Wisconsin Dells?
D-E-L-L-S? Dells?
Yes.
I've never heard of that? Nope.
It's not far from.
What is it?
I'm honestly not sure. I've heard of it before. I believe it is some sort of. It looks like a tourist attraction because they have a Ripley's Believe It or Not there in that town. But it's some sort of aquatic get together. They'll have to let us know.
Huh. All right.
But some sort
of aquatic get together.
Yeah, you go there for the water sports and activities.
I got you.
North of Madison, so I'm sure he is a University of Wisconsin, and northwest of Milwaukee. So you've been to Green Bay, Wisconsin, correct?
Yeah, we landed in Milwaukee and drove to Green Bay, and that was where we had the famous rental car snafu, where I went to the wrong rental car counter. Remember, it was Budget or Thrifty? And I got them confused.
Yeah.
And then the idiot woman gave me a car. Even though I showed her my driver's license, told her my name, and she gave me some keys. Because apparently, I don't know, it was another Garcia. I know it's a very unique name. And so I drove off in the car that was only supposed to be used for a day for like 3 days. And it was a mess. Anyway.
Yep.
Milwaukee. What is it? The good land means the good land.
If you say so.
We were told by Alice Cooper what was that movie with Mike Myers and Dana Carvey? The Wayne's World movie.
Yep.
Anyway.
That was not a documentary, by the way.
No. When it comes to knowing what cities' names are in the Native American tongue, I trust Alice Cooper like no other.
Wisconsin needs a hockey team, like an NHL team. If they ever do expand... If they ever relocate, I would love to see Milwaukee get a team. I think it would be a very successful team. And it would be fun to see. They're close to Detroit. They're close to Chicago. They're not far from the Wild. It's a good area for hockey. That would be a fun one to see.
I've always, on my list of jerseys is a Milwaukee Admirals jersey. Love those. Oh,
that is, those the logo jerseys. Is fantastic. Yeah. If you've never seen it, it is a skull. Like a pirate skull with the pirate hat on. Mm-hmm. And it's fantastic looking. Absolutely. And so I would make that the name of the NHL team, the Milwaukee Admirals. Boom. You got the logo. You got the history. You got the gear from the past. I'd love to see it. Let's get to the email portion of the show, Eddie. Enough of your flipping the gums.
Yeah, I don't like that gum flipping.
Yeah. Our first email comes from Dave Taylor, longtime friend of the show. He says, hey, guys, the season is humming along, and it seems my teams, the Red Wings and Coyotes, are once again going to get the long break and miss out on the playoffs. With the Coyotes, it expected, but I totally get Doug checking out on his playoff team. And yet, as bad as it seems sometimes, at least they occasionally win games. I'm curious what you think, Dave, of my comments in the first period, that the Coyotes are not far from being good. I'm not saying a cup contender, but a good team. Dave continues saying, the San Marino soccer team in FIFA has not won a single game since 2004. Not one. Pretty wild. And chin up, Dave Taylor. I don't understand how that can happen. San Marino has a team, a soccer team, and they have not won a game in 20 years? Why do they still have a team? What are we doing here? Yeah.
That's crazy.
That is a diehard fan. If you're a season ticket holder for San Marino, God bless you.
I apologize. I was distracted by a text message. I will share because, you know what? We all need some good news in our life. So my high school buddy, Mark, I mentioned on the show, has been diagnosed with cancer. And initial news was that it was not good news. And he just sent me a text saying that he's been undergoing treatment. And his doctor said that he has seen significant improvement in his condition. So
excellent.
That made my day. So
excellent.
Always want to pass along a little good news. Why not?
The biggest win of the hockey season would be Mark beating cancer. There's no doubt about that. Hope he gets to ring that bell in the very near future.
Our next email comes from Andrew, and I believe he's in the UK. Oh, he says, good morning, good afternoon, good evening. Dougwin and Edless from not so sunny Manchester. Those are some interesting names for us. Yeah. He says 62 goals and counting at the time of this email for Austin Matthews. What an absolute privilege it has been to watch him this season. After his surgery, I worried that Matthews' key weapon, his instant release wrister, would be blunted. No danger. He's finding new ways to score every night and without Marner there to help too. Watching Matthews and Marner in person in Sweden last year, it struck me how they only had eyes for each other. In the warmups, every pass was between the two. It was telepathic. And now, without Marner feeding him, Matthews is setting new personal bests. This tangentially leads me on to an X-Leaf. Did I say that word right, by the way? Yes, Doug said with his mind. Zach Hyman loved him as a Leaf. I can't believe the season he's having in Edmonton. That blowhard criticism, him for having a rich daddy, is clearly just after attention, because as Matthews has proved, that having amazing line mates helps. Neither they nor your daddy's fat bank account are the ones turning the puck in. Zach Hyman has passed 50 goals because he works like a Trojan and has made the most of the opportunities he's had. Then again, what do I know? I suppose I'm only writing this email and writing for a living because my dad had enough money to buy me a pen as a child. No such thing as talent after all, only privilege and unfair advantage. Going off my rate card, an email of this length has the financial value of £350. That's $440. I'll waive my usual fee as payment for your fine podcast. Andy the Leafs fan and marketing writer for hire in Manchester, the UK.
Very good. I have nothing to say other than I know the pain of losing a player and seeing them go on to great success. We all do. Mm-hmm. We've all had our favorite team lose a player that then goes on to heights that were unseen or unimaginable with your franchise. And man, my goodness. Zach Hyman is one of those. And if you're, if you lost him or Sam Reinhart or any of these guys that you're going to lose at some point, all you can do is just tip your hat to him and congratulations. Hopefully you got what you got what you could for him back in the day, because yeah, that is quite the season he's having. He has found his happy space. Our next email comes from Dylan. He's in Florida and he says, hello gents, as per usual, I hope all is well with you. The Panthers really can't get out of their own way, can they? Again, losing down the stretch headed into the playoffs again. I won't be surprised if it goes two ways here. First is a first round exit or a repeat of past season, but different opponent for the Panthers. And if they win it, thoughts even with are any thoughts with them faltering lately? Thank you both for another season of coverage of our league. Go Cats for what it's worth. Dylan in Florida. Dylan, I would not put too much stock into the end of the season here. We have seen time and time and time again that the playoffs are a reset in every way. Once it gets in there, it's just a matchup of one team. You don't have to beat everybody at once. You have to survive in advance. You have to beat the team you're playing in the first round. And the Florida Panthers will have a chance to do that and be in a good position to do that with the depth they've procured over the years and the talent that they have. So I get that they're struggling right now, but I am not at all concerned about their playoff chances once they make the playoffs, nor do I think it is relevant to their this current struggle to their playoff chances.
My final email comes from Scott, who this is our guy Scott Goglin. I'm looking at the email address, Scott G.
Yeah.
Who occasionally heard from on the old Twitter there. And he addresses this interestingly. He says, "Dear the Puck Podcast, I write you today to inform you that the current state of the NHL draft sucks. I'm not talking about the part where the owner and his curly-haired son stand on stage and pander to the fans back home watching the draft at the Saucy Sailor. I'm talking about the way in which the draft order is determined. It is quite evident that if you want to be a true Stanley Cup contender, you need to have elite talent on your team, and the vast majority of elite talent is found at the top of the draft. And the only way to be in that part of the draft is to be extremely bad. Most of the teams that are in that range every year are there on purpose. That's right. Every year there are professional hockey franchises who intentionally ice bad teams. I have a solution to this problem. Every team that doesn't make the playoffs gets one lottery ball. The first ball that comes out gets the 16th pick, the next one the 15th, and so on until you get to the penultimate, that means second to last, Eddie, thank you, ball, which is the number one overall pick. This would be done live on TV and would be a terrific spectacle, and the way the balls come out of the hopper would cut down on speculation it was rigged, although I'm sure people like Doug will still find a way to accuse the NHL of trying to screw the Mighty Ducks. This will put an end to teams tanking to get a high pick, since they will be equally likely to get the number one pick overall, whether they finish 32nd or 17th. There will still be teams who rebuild and sell the older players in exchange for picks and prospects, but there would be absolutely no incentive to ice a bad team. There is another layer that I would like to add: increase the amount of teams that make the postseason. This would give teams another incentive to be competitive each year. You could have six divisions in which the top two teams from each division make the playoffs. Then you take the next 10 teams and put them into some sort of week-long play situation to weed them down to four teams to enter the 16-team tournament, all while the other 12 teams rest their weary bodies. That would add another six teams into the postseason mix, further decreasing the temptation for teams to tank, seeing as how there is a higher chance for them to make it to the postseason. There'll be more teams that are competitive and more meaningful games throughout the season as more good teams fight for more playoff berths. But what about those poor teams that suck donkey and end up drafting 12th overall? We have a special spot for them called the corner of the room where they can cry into their beers and think about what they did wrong. I'm now just realizing that we'll have to alter what I said earlier about the 16 teams who missed the playoffs being entered into the lottery. That is a fabulous combination of ideas. If the NHL implements them, they will see interest in the league and revenue increase dramatically. Sincerely, the number one comedian on YouTube and Instagram, and that is Scott Pizzazz.
Did I say that? Scott, it's been too long, my friend. Yeah. Good to hear from you. Always enjoy hearing from you.
I know that owners in the NHL would be all for expanding the playoffs and getting more.
Well, here's my proposal, Eddie. Mm-hmm. And I'll ask you a couple questions before I give you my playoff proposal of how to handle the draft. What do the owners love more than anything else?
Well, that would be the moolah.
Cash money.
Yeah.
What is not making them any money whatsoever? The draft lottery. That doesn't make them money. And it's not fun. There's accusations that it's rigged, even though they've broadcast it, et cetera, et cetera. So my proposal, and I say this as a fan of a team that has not made the playoffs in 6 years, is you want to end, excuse me, tanking. Here's what you do, in my opinion. You take the 16 teams that make the playoffs, good for you, enjoy the tournament. Take the 16 teams that don't, welcome to the NHL NIT. We seed them just as we do the playoffs. The top team that got to barely missed the playoffs plays the worst team that was the absolute worst in the NHL. We have best of three series, home, road, home for the one team. They get two home games. The other teams get none or one. And you have a tournament. It's exactly the same. The most you would play, the most games you would play would be nine games if you won the NIT. And the winner gets the number one overall pick. The runner-up gets the second overall pick. The two teams that lost in the semifinal, the final four, they get the third and fourth pick based on their regular season standings. But the incentive is obviously there to keep a competitive team. I would watch those games. You're damn right I would watch the Ducks in those tournaments. And if you miss the playoffs, you still have something to play for, and you're charging full price tickets for 24 games in the first round, potentially 12 in the second round and six in the second round, or potentially another three games in the final round. I'm saying there's money to be made. Teams would control their own fate. There would be no more conspiracy, and you would end tanking immediately. Your thoughts, Eddie Garcia?
I love it. I told you last week when we talked about this, I love it. I think it's an awesome idea. I think it makes a ton of sense. I think it's great. As yep. you mentioned, though, the only thing that it would, you know, affect could be the trade deadline, where teams might not be as willing to part with certain players.
I think, in fact, you'd have people buying.
It's possible. Yeah. You know, I mean, if there's a generational talent,
right,
you could definitely see that.
Yeah. I want to improve crazy. My team for and the NIT.
How crazy would it be, and good for discussion, if two non-playoff teams had a trade, and that player that was dealt beat his old team to get the number one or something, right. You know, something like that. That would be, we'd eat it up. It makes too much sense. I would love to see it.
The drama would be, I would actually have games that mattered for the Ducks. I would love to see that. Get to see a playoff field. The players on your team get to feel a little bit of playoff hockey, get to see a mini series. And like I said, it's not an inconvenience for the players, because the most you would play if you won the whole tournament is nine games,
mm-hmm.
by my estimation. Am I doing this right? No, 12 if you go to the final four. So there'd be four rounds, just like the regular one. So 12 games if you went the entire duration. That's not that much. That's less than two rounds in the playoffs. It's not
Does
unfair.
Any league in the world do something like this?
No.
Well, now you're also innovative. You're doing something. And if it works, other leagues will copy this. You know,
the NBA would copy that overnight.
The interest in this would be, I think, unbelievable. And as you say, it gives you something. You know, I do that Locked On LA Kings show.
Yeah.
And I've thought many times, I can't imagine doing that show if I'm the Sharks guy. I can't imagine having to do that every 5 days and talk about this crap team. How many times can you talk about your prospects? You know what I mean? Yeah. How many times can you talk about the rebuild? It just, you want to have meaningful games to break down and talk about and preview. And if you did this, the Sharks would still have meaningful games to talk about at the end of the year. It's great for content. I'd love it. It would be.
And plus, you're going to sell the tickets to a lot of games.
And somebody out there in TV land or streaming land would absolutely
exactly.
pay for money for that.
Bingo. You're going to sell the broadcasting rights. You're going to sell the advertising rights. The Scotiabank, you know, draft lottery tournament, whatever the case would be, you're going to make money hand over fist, NHL owners. And the players, cry a river. You can control your own fate. You want to improve your team next year? Here's 12 games. Here's a tournament that you can go and get the best player in the draft. And you earned it on the ice. You celebrate that win by going and getting the best player in the world. And there's no, the NHL rigged this for Chicago. They did this for that. They don't like this franchise. They don't like that franchise. You earn it on the ice. I would love this as a Ducks fan. Love it.
I think it's a phenomenal idea. I don't know if anyone is realistically talking about it, but I think it's fantastic. I think it would be amazing.
Yeah. The NIT, baby. Get
or
it going.
Whatever you want to call it. Yeah.
Whatever, you know, but my point being the teams that didn't make the tournament.
Yeah. Yeah.
Get them in there.
Absolutely.
And boy, a team like Pittsburgh, it would also be a little bit of a salve on the wound of not making the playoffs.
One thing that did pop in my head though is what if you're one of those bubble teams? Are you going to tank to get into the loser tournament?
No,
so you can get the draft pick?
Of course not.
What if it's more important? What if it's more important for you to try and get a Connor Bedard than it is for you to have a pipe dream at the Stanley Cup?
The players still play the game, and the players are not going to tank. The Pittsburgh Penguins are not going to tank so that they can get a chance at Backlund.
You could say that about all the teams now. The players are still playing hard.
But the organization iced a bad team intentionally because they didn't want to have any wins. That's what the Blackhawks are doing. That's what the Sharks are doing. But if there was no incentive to do that because you're not going to get a better draft lottery position, you still have to win games in this tournament. If you lose in the first round, you're picking 15th, 16th, 14th, 13th. That's not going to get you a generational player. So the players, if you look at what we talked about in the East, the Penguins, the Flyers, the Capitals, Islanders.
Let's use the Penguins as an example right now.
Yeah.
Right?
They are not going to miss the playoffs. The players on the ice are going to do everything they can to make the actual playoffs, not to try and get Macklin Celebrini the next year. There's no way.
Okay.
Now, the incentive is if they do miss the playoffs, okay, the first dream is gone. But now we can make our chances to win next season better by going out and winning this tournament. So we still have something to play for. Our season's not done yet. Our goals are not done yet. And we can go and get the best. We can go give our organization the best chance possible to improve themselves in the offseason. It's a fantastic idea. The only thing as I'm thinking this out, and this is just a real-time thought process, the only problem would be a team that misses the playoffs. So let's say, for example, in fact, I can look at it right now because I have this. So let me look. Why don't you vamp for a second while I look something up, Eddie?
Okay. My wife is going to see Bruce Springsteen in concert tomorrow. And I will not be going because I'm not a fan of his. And I was thinking, what historic musical act do I hate? Like Springsteen, I don't hate him. Like if I got a free ticket, I'd go. I'm not going to spend money to go see. Even if it's a legendary artist, I'm not going to spend money to go see someone I'm not like really excited to see. If I had a free ticket, sure, I'd go. What the hell? I was thinking, what really historic band would I like refuse to go even if like a free ticket up front? The one that came to mind was the Grateful Dead. I really can't stand their music. Just awful. I know that my cousin Jerry Garcia is now dead, so I don't even know if they still play music anymore, but anyway, how is that for vamping? Does that do anything for you? Are you still looking up something or do I need to keep going?
That's fine. That's okay. Fine. So for example, I can't find an exact idea here because I'm not able to track it down. But let's say you're a team that misses the playoffs and somehow, some way you had traded away your first round pick. That's a problem. Because now what's your incentive to go out there and bust ass in the tournament?
True.
But that's not good enough to stop the entire tournament from happening. You know what I'm saying? So
maybe there's
a clause in there that if you win the tournament,
you get the pick and it goes to
get the pick and it pushes back one season.
Yeah. 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 Yeah.
Now you've got an incentive to go out there and win it. So I would be in favor. You have to win the tournament though. Getting into the second place is not good enough.
Right.
If you win the tournament, you get to retain the pick. So everything would be a conditional first round pick. I think I absolutely love it. Love it. It would be so fun. So fun. I'd watch that, man, just as much as I watch the playoffs. I'd be more invested as a Ducks fan. Our last email comes from Hart in Lake Echo, Nova Scotia. He says, gentlemen, I hope you are well. Carolina's soon-to-be unrestricted free agent, Tuvo Teravainen, has found himself outside of his usual spot in the top six much of the year. His ice time has been so scant that he may forget what the name of his team is. My question is this. Do you think that teams ever artificially depress a player's statistics by reducing ice time in hopes of re-signing them long-term at a lower rate in the summer? Of course, this would possibly tick off the player and make it harder for them to re-sign. But if a player is putting up mediocre numbers without quality ice time, the team knows he's capable of more if put in a better position. I'm guessing other teams know this too. Anyway, it's a bit of a hammed up conspiracy theory to be sure, but do you think it happens, even just occasionally, that teams try to keep upcoming UFA's numbers down to make them cheaper to sign? Have a great week, Hart in Lake Echo, Nova Scotia. No, for exactly what you talked about, Hart. The player would know what's what. And if he's playing well but not getting the ice time or not getting the power play time, then he knows why, and he's not going to re-sign with that team in the offseason. Do I think they do this with restricted free agents? 100%. 100%. If you control the player's rights in the offseason, 100% you will keep his stats down, if at all possible, if it doesn't hurt the team winning the games, to try and keep and make him more affordable to sign in the offseason. I don't think it happens a lot, but I think it happens. And it's only with restricted free agents, though, not with an unrestricted free agent, because the player would be pissed off and leave. And if it's a restricted free agent, they will be pissed off as well, but they don't have the option. They would need an offer sheet to leave. And by the time they are an unrestricted free agent, they probably will have been given the ice time they deserve, and it will all be forgiven and forgotten.
All right, that is going to do it for this week's show. Thank you very much to everyone who took the time to send us an email. If you would like to email us for next week's show or sometime in the future, the email address is feedback@puckpodcast.com. We're on Facebook, facebook.com/puckpodcast, on Twitter, @puckpodcast. And again, Patreon, if you'd like to support us, patreon.com/puckpodcast. All right, we are getting down to it. Interesting games coming up next week. Looking forward to talking about it on our next show. Doug, any closing thoughts before we say goodbye? Is there a band out there? Is there a legendary band that if you got free tickets to go see, you would say no thank you?
Alice Cooper's one of them. Yeah. I'm not a fan of his at all.
Me either. Seems like a nice guy, but...
Yeah, I would rather go play a round of golf with him.
Yeah,
he's like than big see golfer. Him perform live.
Yeah,
100%. Hang out with him, talk stories of the old days. That would be one. I've seen the Grateful Dead. You know, it is what it is at this point. They're not, you know, a lot of the original members are not there anymore. So it's just a cover band at that point. The Stones. I'm not a Rolling Stones guy, but if it was free, I might go. But I certainly would not pay. And I wanted to go see Bruce Springsteen. Those tickets are outrageously expensive. I mean, Bruce was the hero of the working man back in the 80s. He is pissing on the working man in the 2020s because, hey, you want to come see my show? Get a loan, fans. Because every ticket has a comma in it. My God, he's expensive.
Right? Well, my wife did not pay that much money for her.
No, but you know what I mean. It was a lot, right? It was a lot. It was enough that she was like, oh.
Yeah, I was. You know what's funny? I totally kind of on an aside. I love like movie soundtracks and scores and stuff like that. I'm a big Hans Zimmer fan. I've literally purchased a bunch of music of his. I like listening to it in the car, you know, no lyrics, just listen to the music. Anyway, he's coming in concert at crypto.com arena. I was like, oh, let me see how much these tickets are. Whoa, really? I didn't know it'd be the cheapest seats are like $350 to go see a guy play music from movies. But anyway.
Would they be showing the movies on the screens?
I don't know. That's a good question. That's a very good question.
I've seen them do that at things where they're like, we're going to show the movie and we're going to have a live orchestra. And John they do that like the
Hollywood Bowl, right?
Yeah, right, kind of thing. Right. Yeah. And John Williams is going to do something. And that's something that you and I live in Los Angeles. We have opportunities to see that.
Yeah.
Whereas people that live in Portage, Wisconsin do not in our hometown. Yeah. They may have to go down to Milwaukee. But if it even tours that much. But no, I've never been interested in seeing one of those because it's not like, man, I really want to hear a live orchestra perform it. The music's the same on a CD to me. You know what I mean? Whereas because they're not going to change it. A live performance by a rock band, there's going to be subtle differences. They're going to extend one part. They're going to do something different. They maybe change the lyrics a little bit just for the show. So there's a reason to go see it live. I don't want to just hear radio live. I want to see some differences. So my wife and I have a legendary or the bucket list of bands we want to go see. And we were talking about that when we went to see Chicago. Who's left on our list that we haven't seen? And we both said, if ELO, Electric Light Orchestra, ever tours, we would go see that. Well, they're coming to town, and we're going to go see them. So that's one that is on our bucket list, and we will be happy to see them. But we've been fortunate to see so many bands that are legendary artists. And saw, to my knowledge, the last performance where both Ringo and Paul McCartney were on the stage together at Dodger Stadium. So that was fantastic. But anyway, we're way off.
Yeah, we are. We are. Anyway, that'll do it for this week's show. Thank you all very much for listening. We appreciate you. And we will talk to you next week with another edition of the Puck Podcast.